Good evening, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White, speaking. Tonight's guest is Amora Kuan Yin. Amora is the author of the Pleiadian Workbook, Awakening Your Divine Ka, the Pleiadian Tantric Workbook, Awakening Your Divine Ba, Pleiadian Perspectives on Human Evolution, and the fourth book, Affinity, Reclaiming the Divine Flow of Creation. She is a channel for the Pleiadian Emissaries of Light, Syrian Archangelic League of the Light, Andromedan Emissaries of Light, Ascended Masters, Intergalactic Federation of Light, and founder of Pleiadian Lightwork, the Dolphin Star Temple. I recently had the pleasure to visit Amora at her home in Mount Shasta, and I'm pleased to have her on the show tonight, so let's welcome her now. Hi, Amora. How are you?
I'm great, Lance. How are you?
Oh, good. I'm wonderful. I was thinking what we could do is just go back a little bit into your past and find out, because you know, when we were talking with, when Liz was doing the taping of her show, you know, or her recording of you, there was some interesting stuff that came up about your childhood and how you were different. Mm-hmm. I thought that might be interesting to start there.
Well, I grew up in Bible Belt, Kentucky, and I have a memory when I was almost 2 years old of my mother coming to sit on the bed and sing to me and tuck me in for the night. And when she came in, I asked her, "Mommy, why is Jesus so big that his head goes through the ceiling?" And she says, "What?" And I said, "Well, even when he's sitting on the bed behind you like he is right now, he's so big that his head goes through the ceiling. I thought he was the same size as us." And my mother kind of threw a fit and says, "Don't you ever let me hear you say anything like that again, because Jesus is dead. He died for our sins. No one can see him." And when she said that, deep in my heart, I felt really sad for her, and I felt a lot of compassion, because it was the first time that I had the realization that the reason that the other people around me didn't talk about the fairies and the angels and seeing Jesus was because they had forgotten how.
Yeah, yeah.
And I knew from that point on I had to keep silent about it, but that what I saw was real because there was no way it couldn't be real.
Right, right. Did you have quite a few mystical experiences when you were growing up?
Well, when I went into grade school, I think between the first and second grades, I sort of lost the ability to see the fairies. I think the peer pressure got to be too much, and I went into a mode of wanting to try and fit in. And I still had certain experiences. I mean, I could still feel energies, and I could still kind of tell when people weren't telling the truth and things. But I shut it down for a while. But it opened up in a big way when my grandmother died. I actually went through experiencing her death as if I was in the death spiral with her.
Wow.
And it lasted for like 5 minutes.
Wow.
And she was the person in this world I was closest to ever. Mm. And it was a very powerful experience. And afterward, I didn't know that she had died in a clear way, but I knew I had to call her right away, and I felt urgent. But my mother wouldn't let me call her.
Mm.
And she had already gotten the word that my grandmother had died, and she wouldn't tell me. And the next morning, she woke me up early to tell me that my grandmother had died. And what came out of my mouth is, "I knew it. Why didn't you let me call last night and tell me last night?" She just says, "I wanted you to get a good night's sleep."
Oh.
So things like that happened all along. My big awakening happened again when I was about 28 years old. And I started to realize that I had been poisoning myself my whole life and not wanting to live. And I came to a revelation in a hypnosis session one day about that. And as I came out of it, the inner voice that I heard was, "You deserve to be the best you can be." And my response was, "I have no idea what that means, but I won't give up till I find out. And I didn't know anything about fasting or spirituality or New Age at the time.
In fact,
I still considered myself atheist. But I decided that fasting was something that was supposed to clean out poison, and I felt so poisoned inside, I started a 2-week fast. And during that fast, I had an amazing visionary opening and just started seeing the perfection in everything. And, yeah, I had a huge visionary opening. I was driving down a road, and I looked up at the hillside. And it was like all of a sudden I could see every leaf on every tree, and I could see the other side of the tree besides the side that I was looking at.
Whoa.
And then I looked out across the meadow, and I could literally see every single blade of the hay that was growing there.
Whoa.
And I just started crying, and inside the inner voice said, if one single blade of grass or grain of sand was missing, the perfection would be foiled.
Wow.
And I just saw the beauty and the perfection of creation, and that was really the start of my consciously chosen spiritual path.
Wow. when did you actually discover your purpose for being here in this lifetime, and how did that beginning journey unfold?
Well, to me, it's funny. In the late 70s, I read the book, I'm Okay, You're Okay.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It was huge for me because it was the first time I'd ever had any sense of really being okay. And when I read the book, every word made so much sense. And I started being handed a lot of great books at that time.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of when my spiritual awakening began. And I knew that my purpose was to find how to be the best I could be. But then in 1993, when I'd been on the path for about 14 years, I had another powerful vision happen where I was at a Brighton Bush Hot Springs retreat in Oregon, and I looked at this woman's pendant that she had on, and I didn't know the woman, but when I looked at it, I said, that pendant is a Pleiadian design, and then I started seeing things and telling her what I was seeing. And she had also brought through a healing process that I had brought through. And then at one point when we were talking, the Archangel Ra from the Pleiades came in and said, you have to learn how to awaken your Ka and teach others how to awaken theirs. And I said, what in the world is the Ka?
Right.
And he said, it's an ancient Egyptian word that means the body of the Christed self.
Oh.
And you have to learn to awaken that in yourself and then teach others how to do it.
Oh.
And then that night, I was kept awake for hours and being shown visions of the Ka channels. And when I came home after that trip, I started working on a friend of mine doing sessions and bringing through the Ka channels and taught my first Pleiadian Lightwork Intensive that fall. And from that day, when the channels came through and I knew that I was going to be the founder of a mystery school and bring through a whole healing system, that's when I knew what I'd be doing the rest of my life.
Wow. That's a wonderful story. I love it.
Yeah. Can I tell you quickly what led up to that?
Yes, of course.
Because I think this is an important point.
Yes, please.
I had gone to Brighton Bush on a retreat because I was in exhaustion, and I had overstretched myself with my overscheduling of sessions and trying to take care of everybody. I was sort of a rescue monger in those days. But that morning when I woke up, I suddenly had the revelation that I had stopped trying to feel everything and be fully alive, and that I had focused my living on everybody else and not on my own aliveness. And when I had that revelation, I said, I will be fully alive. I will be fully embodied. I will feel it all. And I went out and jumped in this really ice-cold stream called Devil's Hole,
ooh,
which was really freezing water, and within an hour was staying in it for 20 minutes at a time.
Wow.
And because I knew in the cold water that it would wake my body up, and then that night was when I had the vision about opening the Ka channels.
Wow. That's amazing. I talked to a lot of people about the coming shifts that have been prophesied by Casey, the Mayans, the Hopis, and others.
Right.
What's your take on what's happening right now and today?
Boy, that's a big question.
In five words or less.
I'm just kidding.
Take your time.
Well, it's the awakening of the golden age, and we're supposed to be going into a time when there'll be 1,000 years of peace on the earth, and a time when all the people who are left on the planet will be ready to spiritually awaken.
Mm-hmm.
And in order for that to come about, we have to have the awakening of 144,000 people who come into total mastery in Christ consciousness,
mm-hmm,
which will trigger the desire to awaken in the rest of the people who are left on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been going on for a while, that the frequencies are increasing dramatically, dramatically, dramatically. And the frequency increases kind of started in 1987 with the harmonic convergence.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's a general answer.
Right, right. I know there's a lot more to this story than,
right.
You know. Do you feel that 2012 is some kind of pivotal date for all of us?
Well, there's a lot of debate about whether that's the exact right date,
mm-hmm.
because some people say the Mayan calendar has been figured wrong, and some people say it's right. But I think somewhere roughly around that time, give or take a year or two,
right, right.
is kind of a turning point for
the
awakening.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking,
and
too.
And it's by that time that we need to have 144,000 people Christ awakened.
Would you call that like the, is that, would you consider that the ascension process that we're talking about?
Well, we are talking about an ascension process, but it's more like an ascension process that has to do with the raising of consciousness,
mm-hmm.
where we're ascending to a higher dimensional level of existence. And I'll tell you, someone asked me once about, well, when you become fully an ascended master, then do you just ascend and leave the earth?
Yeah.
And I says, no, when you become fully an ascended master, you're tuned in enough to know what's the right next step, and you base your next step on that, not on having to get off of the earth plane.
Right.
Because if you're going for being an ascended master so you don't have to be on the earth anymore, you're not going to make it.
Right, right.
Can you imagine someone like Jesus or Mother Mary up there saying, well, thank God I got out of that hellhole of the earth, you know?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
Because when you're at that level, you love it all and you have nothing to avoid.
Right, right, right. That's a really important point, and I know you stress that in your books.
Yeah.
And,
but I do want to tell you something.
Yeah.
About 2 weeks ago, I was leading a monthly spiritual gathering here in Mount Shasta, which I do the first Sunday of every month.
Uh-huh.
And a group of Syrian archangels came in, and they said that there were finally enough people on the earth aligned with the planetary ascension and divine plan that they could send an ascension wave through the planet this month.
Oh, wow.
And on November 11th, which was a lot of people were aligning for 11-11.
That's right.
I was teaching a class, and we were taken into a meditation, and there was an ascension wave sent through the earth on that day.
Wow.
But there's going to be a bigger one before the month ends.
Wonderful.
And an ascension wave is a frequency that starts to eliminate things of a lower frequency that have been transcended.
Oh, well,
so
I
that's happening this month.
Well, that's already started for me.
Yes.
In a big way.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about it on the air, but definitely the lower vibrations are being removed.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Also, you know, when in November, another thing that's coming up on the 19th, if you follow these things, don't we enter into the Mayan fifth night, which is 360 days long, and it's supposed to be the darkest planet period on the planet?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Well, then we won't touch that. We won't touch that. But it does seem that things are getting rather dark here on the planet with the corruption and the greed and the... I've just been reading about some of the plans that the wealthy elite have, and it's could be very disturbing if you weren't focusing on a higher path.
And it's important that we do focus on the higher path and not see those people as enemies, but just send them as much love and light as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
when we see them as enemies, we keep the corruption going, because
yes.
we keep an energy of us and them and the enemy and the good guys, the dark and the light. And we need to start seeing everyone as a part of the vital picture and sending them our love.
Right, right. In your books, you mention how vital it is to develop personal integrity and to tell the truth. Why is that?
Well, if we want to truly become our master selves and become Christ conscious and fully awakened and enlightened, there's no option around that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that helps us by coming into more integrity and honesty as we become onto our path fully is there was a process that was shown to me many years ago where they showed me how what happens with the neural pathways and the soul matrix when we are, when we don't speak or act in a spontaneously truthful way that we know is right.
Mm-hmm.
And what they showed me is when we block ourselves from taking what we know is the best action at any moment or speaking our truth in any moment and being honest, it's like our soul sort of tightens because it can't handle the frequency of dishonesty and untruth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if we weave cobwebs around the soul.
Mm.
And when the guide showed me, I was doing a healing on someone. And what they said is, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive.
Yeah.
And they said, and those words were given to someone on the earth at one point and became an expression to give you a hint about what's needed in terms of total honesty and integrity. And I believe that everyone who really and sincerely wants to enter onto the spiritual path and awaken to total truth, I believe that we have to make a vow to ourselves to live in impeccability.
Yes.
And impeccability
yes.
means doing what is what you know to be the right thing in every situation.
Yes.
And not hesitating for a moment. And if you have fear of speaking the truth to someone, you need to remind yourself, this fear is not my truth. It's just an emotion, and I'm still going to do what I'm right, what is right, even though a part of me feels fearful to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
learning to override those negative voices of the ego.
Yeah. Yep. That's really good advice. Many in the groups that I'm in seem to want or look for instant fixes, such as DNA awakenings and other New Age devices. Is there some personal work that's entailed with spiritual evolution?
Yes, it's not an instant fix. It's certainly very accelerated right now. But if you're looking for an instant fix and someone to do it for you, how can you ever say you're in your own mastery? And to me, the spiritual path is about really refining your consciousness and your choices, becoming impeccable, learning to live in oneness with all that is, meditating daily so that you can constantly bring your consciousness back to that higher level of awakening, aligning with your true spirit self, learning to know the difference in truth and illusion, mm. learning to know the difference in the ego personality and the spirit self. And as we practice those things and learn them and learn what to give our consciousness over to, then we have a chance of becoming awakened. But when somebody says they can give you the quick fix or do it for you, go in the opposite direction. The Pleiadians often say that we will work with you in any way that's appropriate, but we will never work with you in a way that disempowers you from coming into your own awakening.
Right, right, right. You know, I've always felt a great affinity for the Pleiadians in their work. I first read about them through Barbara Marciniak. Can you tell us more about them?
Well, there's different ones, and the ones that Barbara Marciniak writes about are a little different than the ones I work with.
Okay.
I work with a group called the Pleiadian Emissaries of Light.
Okay.
And they are headed by a group of Pleiadian archangels who are at a certain level where they, I don't know how to say it, they hold the ascension consciousness and the divine plan for our solar system. Because they are the head of the group in the Pleiades that went through the whole evolutionary process and came to a certain point where they had come to the ascension consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And then they're helping us. And they work hand in hand with ascended masters, Syrian archangels, the Elohim, and many other beings. But they're the ones who are closest to us because they kind of are in charge of the overall, like, mystery school systems and things like that.
Okay. And how do the ascended masters work with our planet?
Well, they work with people on a healing and on a teaching level. And when people learn to be conscious of them, some people, they're able to give them messages. And they also help people with their past. But they're not so much in charge of sort of creating the design for the past. They're more like the examples of those who have lived on the earth in bodies
mm-hmm.
and have become fully awakened and Christ conscious. And have moved forward. So they're sort of holding the energy of where we're going for us. and what's needed to get there.
Mm. Now, is it true also that Earth herself is raising her frequency and that she will not be remaining in third density?
That's a little bit of a challenging question to answer. We have been entering into something called the photon belt since the early 90s. And the Earth entered into this photon belt fully and will stay fully in it now for almost 2,000 years. And the photon belt is actually a beam of energy from what we call the great central sun, or the divine source of our universe. And it holds a frequency for undoing everything that has been mutated and brought into a form that's not in divine alignment.
Uh-huh.
So being in this photon band just brings things back into a level of self-affinity with our true selves instead of the ego selves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are already cultures who live here on the Earth who are living on the Earth in a fourth to fifth dimensional reality. And I saw this once when I went to Sedona. I went out to one of the ruins that was kind of way down a long gravel road. And when I got there, I went up to this place where there were ancient cave dwellings.
Uh-huh.
And there was a place where they had built some structures for living in. And when I went into one room, there was a woman who was squatting by an elderly person on the ground. And she looked up at me, and I said, "Hello, who are you?" And I could see through her, but I could see her with my naked eye very clearly. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And she says, "We have a culture that exists here on a higher dimensional level."
Huh.
And she says, "And it's exciting to be around someone third dimensional who can see us, because that rarely happens." And she says, "This is like our sick room and the place where we deliver babies."
Oh.
And I says, "But how can you have a sick room if you're in a higher dimensional level of existence?" And she says, "Well, I can't explain it all to you, but just know that it's that death still exists on this level."
Huh.
"But it's a very transcendental experience."
Huh.
And I says, "Well, where are the rest of the people who live here?" And she says, "Oh, they're having a big meeting over in one of the caves. You'll see them when you go over."
Huh.
And it was really interesting, because I had brought I have a medicine pipe, and I was going to sit on the rock outside and smoke it and sing some songs, and she asked me if she could join me.
Oh, neat.
And she joined me in singing along with my songs, and then she sang a song, and I sang along with her. and it was just a really beautiful camaraderie that happened.
Wow.
And then as I was walking into the place the next time I went, a little child followed by its mother running after it ran right through my body.
Jeez.
So,
did you feel it?
Yeah. But there are higher dimensional existences and realities that are already here on the Earth at a higher dimensional level,
uh-huh.
and yet they coexist with the physical planet. So it's hard for me to say whether it's still going to be a physical planet and we just exist on a higher level like the beings in Sedona.
Uh-huh.
I have a sense of that being true, because as we move into our wholeness, we come into an alignment with all of the dimensional levels instead of just the third dimension that we're in.
Well, you have a lot of experiences with higher dimensional beings there in Mount Shasta, don't you?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what Mount Shasta is and its purpose and some of the things that happen there?
Well, Mount Shasta is a vortex for the planet. That's one of the planetary. If you work with the 13 chakra system, which I do in the mystery school that I founded, Mount Shasta is the chakra that's right above the head.
Mm.
And that chakra has a job of taking in higher dimensional energies and transducing them into a form that we can utilize in our human consciousness and in the physical world.
Mm.
And so it's a very high frequency earth chakra. And It's a very unique place. I mean, I've heard many stories about people coming here who weren't even on a spiritual path, or people who didn't believe in visions, who actually had visions of angels or ascended masters. And it actually happened to me the first time I came here. It was back in 1985. I was on a trip with a friend, and we were traveling in a station wagon. And we drove up the mountain as we were driving through Mount Shasta to spend the night. And I got out of the car and walked a few minutes over to where there was a creek that was flowing. And I sat down by it to meditate before I went to sleep. And the moment I sat down, this big face, about 4 feet tall and about 3 feet wide, came to me and just glowed. And it told me the source of every problem in my life at the time and what to do about it.
Wow.
And it was just amazing. So when the meditation was over, I went back to the car, and I told my friend, I just had the most amazing meditation of my whole life, and I told him what had happened. And he said, well, yeah, the mountain's known for things like that. And I said, what do you mean? It's a mountain, for God's sake. And he says, well, I don't know. It's some kind of spiritual vortex or something, and somehow people have those kind of experiences here. He says, I never have, but I've heard about them. And I says, well, I'm going to start doing pilgrimages here. So I did, and then I moved here 3 years later. And
wow.
It was actually 5 years later that I found out that the being who talked to me was Saint Germain.
Oh, wow. Wow. What is some of the advice that you could give lightworkers today in regards to being of service to others?
Be a living example of what others are wanting to be. And be in your truth. It's like, never hide who you are from anyone. Never feel like you have to be shy about being on a spiritual path. If I'm on an airplane and somebody asks me what I do, I just tell them straight out.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't want to hear more, they go back to their book or something. If they do, they ask questions. But never be ashamed of telling the truth. And don't try to proselytize, and don't go out believing that it's your job to save people.
Right, right.
Because if you try to do that, you actually end up interfering with their free will.
Mm-hmm.
But if people speak to you in a way that of their free will they want to hear from you about information, then give it. Or ask them if they want to hear what you have to say. And if they say no, then just honor their free will and move on. But the greatest gift that any of us can give is to truly come into our awakening and to be living examples for others of what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then for those who are wanting to do more, I mean, like I teach spiritual trainings and I do healing sessions, and I've put out over 60 meditation and channeling tapes. So people who have already chosen to awaken can access those things, and that's my service. But for some people, their service is just to be out in the business world, but behaving in a new way that is impeccable and in alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And that itself is a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So we all have to just go by the inner guidance about what's right for us individually.
Mm-hmm.
But always living as an example to others is the greatest gift.
I like that a lot. And also you say, you repeatedly speak of throughout your books and elsewhere that... you know, that yours is not the only way, that there are many, many right ways and many different approaches and paths to, you know, spiritual evolution. And I really appreciate that, because some folks don't do that. You know, a lot of people say that their way that's it, or the highway.
Well, the people who say that, I tell people, run in the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
There are many ways on the planet, because there are many types of people. And so what appeals to one person doesn't appeal to another, but they all, and they have different levels of value. I'm not saying they all have equal value, but some have more value than others, because that's what people are ready for,
mm-hmm.
and some are at a beginning level. But you have to trust your intuition about what feels right for you, and then if you're guided to go do a training or read a book or something, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
But don't feel like you have to do something because you're going to miss out.
Mm-hmm.
Only follow it if it's what you really feel guided to. And if the person tells you, if you're going to join our mystery school system, then you have to stop reading books by other teachers and you have to stop doing other kinds of meditation, just say, well, thank you for the information, and move on. because we're at a point on this earth where we need to become a one-world family.
Yes, absolutely.
And living in unity and diversity is an absolute necessity for us to break through. And in order to do that, we need to honor people's individual choices. And I tell my students, when you have completed all the trainings, you will be qualified to work on so many levels with people that you never have to have anything else. But if you feel guided to bring in something else into it, then you're just doing it in your own unique way and bringing your own mastery to it. And
I like that a lot. You do mention that there are many types of people, and most of your books refer to the male and female dualities. So I was wondering, how might gay and transgendered folks apply the knowledge that's within the books?
Well, it's still about balancing your inner male and female.
The inner male and female.
And one of the greatest things that has to be healed on the planet is the male-female split.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean if you're gay that you have to start being with opposite-sex people in sexual relationships.
Right,
but
right.
But it does mean that you have to end the prejudices, the better than, less than, the competition, and really learn to see each other in that spirit of unity and diversity, where we learn to love the things that are different from us.
Oh, absolutely.
Not only because they're different, but even because they're different.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so it's just a matter of each person following that in their own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
But we certainly need to heal the split and any prejudices between the genders.
Mm, absolutely.
This is one of the main things. The guides have said if that heals completely, everything else would be transcended.
Wow. That's a big task.
Yeah, it is.
It's a big task.
But we can do it.
Oh, and we can do it, yes. And we have to believe we can do it. Tell us about angels, guides, and fairies.
Oh, gosh. How do I answer that question?
Well, first, maybe I should simplify that a little bit. Does every human being on the planet have his or her own guides and angels?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
And even if it's someone who doesn't believe in the spiritual path or doesn't believe in any of the stuff that we're talking about, they still have a guardian angel and they still have guides that work with them and give them opportunities to find higher truth, whether they ever choose to do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the fairies, I mean, one of their biggest jobs is to make humans laugh at themselves. And you know, they used to actually be physical on the earth. The fairies, the elves, the gnomes, and even merpeople were physical at one time until the humans started killing them. And they had to go into the higher dimensions and be behind the veils. But they all have their own divine role. And it's not like one of them is any better than the other. They just each play their own unique part.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly there's angels who work with every imaginable divine quality possible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's angels who just do healing. There's angels who hold the energy of blessing, who hold the energy of faith, of protection, of love, of humor, of joy, of peace, you know. So you can call on angels of any divine quality and ask them to help you have more of that quality within yourself. If there's things that you know that you need to heal or bring into yourself, like for years I used to say, I need more patience and faith and I want it now or I'm never going to believe, and then I would laugh. But I used to call on the angels of patience and faith a lot. And I feel like I've really healed those issues to a great extent. And by working with the guides and angels in that direction.
Of all the practices mentioned in your books, what would you say is the most important technique that you would recommend for daily use?
If I had to pick just one, it would be the chapter in the Pleiadian workbook, Awakening Your Divine Ka, for connecting with the higher self and doing the higher self meditation, because we really need to learn that higher frequency self, that is who we really are. And getting that part of ourselves anchored in the body will naturally help us start to see the things in ourselves that need to be transcended and changed. And it'll help us know who we really are.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading on your site, you have some printed, you've had some articles on your site, and I was reading the one on Castaneda's assemblage point, and it's absolutely brilliant work. Was that channeled through you?
Yes.
That is that. Everybody should go read that one because it's really. I've always been fascinated by that by the assemblage point that Castaneda first brought to light, and you just you did a magnificent job of you know setting it out so that it can be understood and the different points where they're located, what they do, and do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, what I'll say about it is if people want to go to our website and read that, I think it could be helpful. And there's other articles there that are wonderful, too. But the thing that strikes me about it the most clearly is how, when you read about the assemblage point process of evolution, you begin to realize that, well, yes, I had an enlightenment experience 20 years ago, and now I'm still working to become fully enlightened. What happened? How did I fall? You didn't fall. You just got a divine reference point so you'd know what you're moving towards. And for me, for years, I always felt like a failure so much because I remembered that in past lives I had certain abilities and certain ways of being that were better than I was in this lifetime. But then I came to realize, finally, that those reference points in the higher were just to remind me of who I am and what I'm moving toward again, to give me more faith and strength along the way to do the inner work. And to me, that's the main vital energy that the assemblage point teaching gives, because you can have your assemblage point just automatically shift up to over a 10 and experience full enlightenment, and then it may go back down to a 7 where you still need to work on some things,
mm-hmm.
like being fully honest, speaking your truth, or whatever. And then as you do that, the assemblage point begins to shift back up slowly until you finally get to the point that you can hold it over a 10 all the time. But it's a natural process in the path of initiation,
mm-hmm.
to have
mm-hmm.
high reference points. And then to seem to go backward, but you're not going backward. You're just going into your psyche to clear out things that are of a lower frequency than that high experience so that you can finally come to a place of living in that full time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
To me,
in fact, I was trying to place...
value in the article, even if you don't ever care about assemblage point or anything else. The fact that it shows you how that works is, to me, the greatest value of all.
It's a brilliant piece of work. It really is.
Oh, thank you.
And I was trying to figure out where I was on it, and I could see how I cycle up to, you know, a certain level, and then
mm-hmm.
I go back down to the lower level, and that's, you know, I'm at that for a while, and then cycle up higher again. But it all comes around, and you gradually absorb the higher.
Yes.
And then you're ready to make that shift into the higher, and then you cycle back down to that point. So, it's so clear the way that you've written it. I think everybody should go read that.
Oh, thank you.
Some people are going to be curious about what happens to those folks as these shifts increase and intensify, who seem to be immersed in darkness, who promote the agenda of negative entities who are in service to self.
Well, we're going to come to a point sometime along the way, and whether that's in 2012 or 2010 or 2020, I don't know exactly, but we are going to come to a turning point time when there's a point that where the planet shifts, and the people who are not choosing fully to come into the light are going to have an experience as if there's been some kind of a huge earth change, and then they find themselves on the earth with a lot of the people who were there gone. But it's almost like they're going to be shifting to another planetary reality,
mm-hmm.
where they can continue in this process of not remembering for as long as they choose to.
Right.
Because those who are left on what we will experience as the earth will be those who have chosen to come fully into light and truth. So there's going to be a shift, and it's almost will be as if and I'm saying this as if, because it is an as if. It's not literally what's going to happen. And the guides are not even able to explain literally what happened.
Right,
but
right.
It's like there's a point where it's as if the Earth becomes two separate planets, or maybe 12 separate planets, where beings on different levels all experience as if they stay in the same place, but as if the reality changes in a different direction. So there can be people on the Earth who will experience it as if there's a giant, let's say a planetary holocaust.
Right, right.
Where the whole everything and everybody on the Earth is killed, and they experience going through death and then finding themselves in the hell regions for a long time.
Right.
But the truth is, the hell regions are not an actual place. It's something we create through our consciousness. And as we move toward full awakening, we have to learn to transcend our beliefs in those lower energies that are thought of as hell. And we need to learn to not react to them anymore, because there's a point in coming into Christ consciousness where we have to transcend giving our power over to those low-frequency fears,
right,
addictive attractions, like seduction and lust, and we have to take our power back from reacting even to things like murder and rape, and beginning to realize that those are just superficial realities that people have created in order to learn and grow and to act out all the potentials for consciousness.
That makes sense.
And we have to learn to not give our power away in reaction, but to just stay in neutrality and love all the time. And for us to ascend and move through the higher dimensions, we have to come to that point.
It seems like we have a crackly line tonight, don't we?
Is it? I'm sorry, it's not for me.
Not for you? You should hear my side. It sounds like thunder and lightning.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that's my experience of it. Probably the listeners are hearing a nice, clear, you know, radio show, but for me it's been thunder and lightning the whole way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Would you like me to try unplugging my headphones and see if it's better?
Yeah, see if that helps.
Okay. Okay, how is that?
Well,
is that any better?
There's still a lot of crackling.
Huh.
That's better right there.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing, do that.
I'll just hold the phone up to my ear for the rest of our talk.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going to be running out of time in a minute.
Yes.
You know, what you said is interesting about our belief in hell, and it seems that, you know, that's one of the ways that we can see how spirituality is so much different than religion, because religion reinforces these concepts in hell and damnation and those various things. And as far as I'm concerned, those are beliefs that shouldn't be reinforced.
Right. And you know, what we believe in creates our reality.
Right, right.
So if I had to answer a question you asked earlier and say, what's the second most important thing in the books to do, I would say work with the process for clearing beliefs.
Yes.
Because what we give our identity and our beliefs over to determines the reality that we live in. And learning to clear all of our beliefs that have any limitation to them at all is really imperative for really coming into full awakening.
Absolutely. And part of that, I would say, too, if I've been finding that for myself lately, it's been my attachments.
Yes.
And those are, I mean, it's all work. And, you know, once you think you've worked through something, then something else comes up and shows
right.
you that, oh, you thought you were done with that? No way.
And in my fourth book, Affinity, there's a chapter that talks to you about the nature of attachment and how to break free of attachments. And that one could really help people with problems like that.
I just got that book, and it looks like it's going to be terrific.
It's a really lovely book, and it's different from the others. But it starts out with talking about how separation between male and female got started. And
then
it takes you through the how to heal all of the lower ego tendencies.
Yeah, that's really, really important. We were talking about the shift that, you know, will occur at some point in that window of 2012. it seems like we should know, or that there will be a moment when we'll know without a shadow of a doubt that we have made it to a higher density.
Yes.
You know, I mean, will all this light working pay off?
It will, and it is paying off now. And, the contrast between light and dark seems more extreme now. But we have to recognize that that's just an illusion that's given in a planet that's actually a school.
Yeah.
And if we can remember that everyone on this planet is in school to learn about truth and illusion,
mm-hmm.
then we can start to see that difference in the light and dark is a more transitory thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one advice I do want to give is if we may come to a point somewhere along the way where it suddenly starts to seem as if everything around you is coming apart at the seams,
uh-huh.
like the walls and the windows, the plants, the furniture, they may all seem to start shredding and going into different parts and flying apart.
Huh.
If that happens, the best thing you can do is sit down somewhere and just close your eyes and call in your higher self and your guides and meditate, affirming, "I am of the light and truth and love," and go into as much of a meditative state as you can. And when it's done, you'll come out on the other side.
Okay.
And the guides showed me something once. I was in a room in the house I was living in, and Jesus came in, and he says, "We want to show you something." And they started kind of changing the reality around me, and it seemed to be falling apart in the beginning.
Huh.
And then suddenly, I was in a different room than I had been in before, and it was a room in a temple, and the walls looked like they were made of crystalline energy.
Ooh.
And there were ascended masters and very tall beings in white robes around me.
Ooh.
And angels. And he said, "This exists here right now. We're in the house where you're living."
Really?
On the fifth dimensional level.
Wow.
And there may be a time when you go through the transition where you'll see the third dimension falling apart and you start to see a different reality around you.
Uh-huh.
And just know that that is a divine happening.
Wow, wow. I've often thought that.
Yes.
And then some people have visions of being inside of a UFO, too, that their house is actually kind of like a living ship.
Yes.
You give workshops on all of your material, don't you?
Yes, I am. In the mystery school system, I have created 7 levels of teaching. And no matter what other level you're going to do, you have to start with full sensory perception level 1.
Uh-huh.
And in that one, you get all your chakras cleaned out, and you learn how to do reading and healing work. And you even learn how to do things like depossession, and you begin healing the soul on certain levels. And then after that, you do one workshop at a time until you finish them. Or some people come and only do the first one because that's all they need.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think Liz did your workshop, didn't she?
I don't think so. She said she
not.
Wanted to in the future.
Okay.
Yeah.
They sound fascinating. I mean, if I lived closer to Mount Shasta, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Well, I'll tell you, they really do bring about paradigm shifts. For people who come and really apply the material, the paradigm shifts are every training. There's at least one full paradigm shift, and usually more than one.
Wow. Well, tell us, I'm going to just give you some free space to just kind of impromptu talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Okay.
Anything, you know, stories that you want to tell, or anything that you want to share about your life, or, you know.
Well, the story that's coming for some reason is a time when I was staying in Sedona for 5 weeks.
Mm.
And I was staying at a private retreat that some women owned. And on the next to the last day I was there, there was a girl who was also staying there the whole time. And she came up to me and she says, "I have to talk to you about something really important." She says, "You have been the best spiritual teacher for me in my whole life." And she says, "And I didn't even think I needed a spiritual teacher." And I just looked at her and I said, "But we've hardly talked." She says, "But I have watched you." And she says, "I've watched the way that even though you're a big woman, you can wrap up in a wrap around yourself and go and sit in the sun and play your guitar, and you're just doing it for yourself." And you don't care if anyone is around. You don't even notice to see if anyone is around. And she says, what I've seen with you and your interactions with other people here, she says, you're always just yourself.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
put on anything. And she says, you've been my greatest teacher I've ever been around about somebody who knows how to just be real and honest and present and non-self-conscious.
Yes. You know, that was one of the things that struck me when Liz and I visited you at your house. I was just blown away by how absolutely real you are and just no self-consciousness. And I just could feel that you were speaking your truth, and it was a wonderful experience.
Well, I'm not saying that to quote-unquote brag about myself, but I'm saying it to tell people, hey, people want that from you.
Yes.
And so many people go through their lives living in self-consciousness and trying to be a certain way, but what we need to learn to do is we need to learn to recognize who we are and what's real for us and mm-hmm. what we really want in each and every moment, and simply be that.
Yeah.
And you will sometimes find people who don't approve, but if you've learned to be yourself and love yourself fully, it won't matter what other people think.
Absolutely.
And in truth, when you fully master that, you'll begin to recognize that if anyone can look at you and not see your beauty and not see the love that you are, it's because they're not connected enough to spirit yet, and you can automatically feel compassion for them
yeah.
instead of getting angry and judgmental
yeah.
or feeling hurt because they've judged you.
Yeah.
All you can do at that point then is just have compassion, because you recognize that they just haven't come to a place yet where they're able to see the real beauty in people, and you can just send out a prayer that they will find the grace to find that.
Wow, that is so beautiful, Amora. That is really beautiful. I think that's a great place for us to stop and for everybody to ponder that one. Before we run out of time, I wanted to make sure that you could give your web address and how people can reach you.
Of course. Well, the web address is www.amorakwanyin.com, and I'll slowly spell that.
Good.
It's AmorahQuanyin.com. So www.amorakwanyin.com. And if you're interested in the books and you want to order them from a bookstore, you just need to tell them that they're published by Bear and Company, with Amora Kwanyin as the author. And for those who don't go onto websites, I'll also give you our phone number so you can call and you can find out about all the tapes and books that we have for sale and things. And that phone number is 530-926-1122.
Wonderful, wonderful. And if you listeners happen to forget that, or you didn't write it down properly, just click on my show where I have a bio page on the guest, and all that information is there, including her website address. I want to make sure you can find her, because she's a real treasure.
Well, oh, and our email address, too. Can
oh, yeah.
I give that quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Pleiades@amorakwanyin.com. So, and Amora Kwanyin is spelled the same way. And Pleiades is Pleiades. Pleiades.
Terrific.
Pleiades@amorakwanyin.com.
Wonderful. Well, Amora, I have to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. And it's been a great pleasure. And I wish you the best and many blessings, and good luck in your work up there at Mount Shasta. I hope more people find your work and read your books, because they're wonderful.
No, thank you. And I really enjoyed being on the show and talking to you also.
Oh, thanks a lot. And for the folks who are listening right now, you might want to stay tuned, because there's a two-hour interview with Jay-Z Knight. Jim Gilliland has her on his show tonight. So you Jay-Z Knight fans, or you people who are not Jay-Z Knight fans, you get to you can listen to her again and see why you do or do not like this lady. Thanks again, Amora. I really love you, and I wish you a good night and a good night to the audience.
And thanks, I wish everybody. You a good night also. And I just